I think the education part of it started when I began teaching master classes at the Aspen Music Festival and realized how much I enjoyed speaking about what I was doing. And I think when you can speak about what you're doing, you kind of understand yourself a little more. And in New York, I was really privileged to have served on the board of the Harlem School of the Arts, which is a community art school. I don't know, they lowered their standards and put me as the chairman of the Artistic and Education Committee, and that was real smoke and mirrors at the beginning. But I did start to learn about the nonprofit world and governance and why arts matter and why teaching matters and why teaching disenfranchised and minority kids matters even more. I didn't do so well, Lois, then because I was so busy playing the fiddle. Then one thing I did realize is these community art schools, their role should be providing the real talent for the next generation of classical musicians. We have too many white people on stage.
Us, if you will, from your involvement with Harlem School for the Arts, and I think you're being a bit tough on yourself saying you failed. You did have this other commitment, that is to say, fatherhood, along with an international performing career, but you ended up returning to Macon with music education as your purpose. So tell us about how that came about.
The former president of Mercer, Kirby Godsey, who's still there, he's chancellor now, but he came about 11 years ago and asked if I could not move back to Macon, but come back as a professor, visiting professor, with one mandate, and that was to put the Mercer music on the map. And that was it. He gave me no roadmap. And I was certainly flattered, but I got down there, and it took a couple of years until I realized that the model that we're now working with, which is an institute within the School of Music whereby 26 elite undergraduate musicians are taught by the leaders of classical music, the national leaders of classical music, concertmasters of major orchestras, soloists, famous chamber musicians who don't necessarily live in Macon. We have our director, Amy Schwartz Moretti, a very fine violinist in her own right, kind of leading the center from Macon, but she travels as well. She plays her concerts. There are 11 of us who come to Macon on a revolving door basis. Every time a student turns around, one of us is on campus. They don't have just one teacher. They have 11 mentors because of the intimacy of the program. They get a real comprehensive string education. They become better. They are with teachers who have the kind of profile that makes it easier to recruit. People know about us now, and they know that they'll get great teaching. Now they know when they come to Mercer, which is a comprehensive university with a very good law school and a very good business school and a very good liberal arts school, that they'll get the kind of education that will help prepare them for the 21st century real world, where they can learn how to become an independent contracting musician, as the orchestras will finally realize that self-governing will probably be the only way to go in the future, where musicians will make more decisions regarding their livelihoods. Musicians absolutely need to have the authority to determine their own destiny. But they also need the right education. They need to know how a nonprofit works, what American orchestra boards really do. I see musicians, hopefully, musicians and boards working so much closer together down the road, and those two entities really determining the fate of American symphony orchestras. That's just my own dream. I think what we can manage is to at least prepare them with the right kind of curriculum, combination of accounting and microeconomics and public speaking and nonprofit and contract law and dispute resolution and things like that, in addition to the great music they're already learning, at least we feel they'll have a head start once they get out and as the landscape continues to shift.
You mentioned that you think it's imperative that we have more faces of color on the concert stage, in the audiences for classical concerts. When did your interest and your commitment to race relations begin, Bobby?
I grew up in Macon. I was raised in the northern suburbs, went to a segregated school, went to an all-white country club. I didn't really get it until I left. You know, I grew up and saw that things are not as they should be in America. So as I guess I have more of a platform from which to, you know, give my opinion as an artist, my question is, where do the arts fit in? What can the arts do? I mean, people do look to the arts for answers. They look to music for consolation. Music and all the other arts give us and our children ways to communicate across all sorts of divides. And that's why we think this event coming up in Macon on February 21st is something that we feel really, really good about doing. And that's basically the center for strings at Mercer, playing a role in a community event where words and music together will bring a message of hope to the entire community.
Tell us about the event. You will be performing with Anna DeVere Smith. How did that collaboration come about?
As I'm sure many of your listeners know, she is a great actress. She's famous from shows like The West Wing and Nurse Jackie, but so much more than that, she's an activist and a playwright. I mean, she's been nominated for Tonys and Pulitzers for her one-woman shows.
She's a MacArthur Award recipient,
she's
too.
She's also a MacArthur winner. She also has an overdeveloped sense of right and wrong.
How is that overdeveloped?
Well, she wants to do the right thing, and she's determined to do it. And she's an absolutist in many respects. And as an artist, sometimes you have to be an absolutist. She has come up with a pretty amazing program in which she channels civil rights icons and a combination of very powerful words and beautiful music. We performed this program at the Aspen Ideas Festival a couple of years ago. But just the letter from Birmingham Jail of Martin Luther King, which was published in the Atlantic magazine 50 years ago. It was a celebration of the publication of that letter. We decided to turn it into a performance where I would play music as she read these words. Now, usually she actually becomes these people. Here she just read the letter in her own way, which was powerful in and of itself. But I played How Great Thou Art, America the Beautiful, A Shoken Farewell, which is the theme from the Ken Burns civil rights documentary. I played the theme to the movie Schindler's List. I played Spiegel im Spiegel of Arvo Pärt, Handel's Largo. All these things complemented those words beautifully, and it went really well, and so we decided to take it on the road. So we went to San Francisco and played it at Grace Cathedral, and we'll be performing it in Santa Monica for 1 week at the Broad stage. And I was telling Anna all about Macon, how much I loved it, and about the school, and how there are so many wonderful people there who deserve to hear this program. And she jumped all over it and is really excited to be able to be part of this performance. Fleshed it out a little bit. She begins with Charlene Hunter Gault. She becomes Charlene Hunter Gault as an 18-year-old ingenue freshman college student at the University of Georgia. She was the first student to integrate the university, And basically, it's the appetizer of the program. It's like, why is everybody making such a fuss? I mean, this kind of, you know, this kind of feeling. And Anne is just brilliant in the way she channels Charlene Hunter-Galt. And then the meat and potatoes of the program takes place, and that is the reading of Letter from Birmingham Jail. But she bookends the program in the most beautiful way. She truly becomes John Lewis as he extends grace to the bigots who beat him up 50 years ago. An older man and his grandson come to Congressman Lewis's office in Washington, and the older man asks for forgiveness for what he had done. And John Lewis starts crying, everybody starts crying, there's a lot of hugging, forgiveness, just real benevolence. And again, Anna, who spends times with her subjects, it's as if you're listening to John Lewis. Everything, the way in which he pronounces his words, which is sometimes difficult to hear.
I have heard her studs tickle, and just, I have to pinch myself and blink several times, you know, that this is a lovely woman sitting in front and not that character of a man.
Exactly. So that's what we're going to do in Macon, and it'll be at Beulah Land Bible Church, which is the largest church in Middle Georgia. We can seat 2,500 people. And we want a diverse audience, and that's starting to happen. The buzz is pretty great down there. We'll begin the program with the students from the Center for Strings performing Barber's Adagio for Strings, just to, you know, set the mood. And then the program begins. It's not going to be the longest program in the world, maybe 1 hour, hour and 10 minutes. As we've been saying leading up to the program, that actions count, words matter, and music heals.
Well, I think that your work is a testament to that, Bobby, and I thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope I see many of your listeners.